little bit earlier than usual. We have a hard stop right after 6 p.m. for 6:15 committee of the whole meeting. So thank you for all for making it out this evening. So I have the roll call. All supervisors of the committee are present except for Supervisor Kubicki, who is excused. And then we will move on to citizens' comments. Are there any citizens here tonight wishing to speak? Any citizens wishing to speak? Seeing none, citizen comments are closed. I don't have any further comments. Are there any committee members that wish to make any comments?
I do.
Yes.
Donna Adams, Clark Adams?
Yes.
Is 30 years and a half retiring from child support. Calling child support, and I know she's not here tonight, but I just wanted to say, if you have an opportunity to reach out to her and send her a thank you for her service, that would be wonderful. Donna Adams.
Thank you.
She's retiring Monday, so the sooner the better.
Thank you. Any other supervisors? You can govern. All right. We're going to move on to the approval of the minutes from February 6, 2024.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Pearson, second by Supervisor Uhas. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
See the governance?
Aye.
All right. All right, we're going to move on to number five, resolution to approve the appointment. Sheila Siegler to serve on the Brookside Board of Trustees.
Good evening. Sheila is here this evening. As you see in her bio, she's been a long-term clerk out in the town of Wheatland. Comes with us, to us, with a lot of variety of different things she's done in her life. Attended the trustee meeting yesterday. I think would be an asset to that group, and I would ask this committee to endorse her appointment. She is here this evening if you have any questions.
Mr. Chairman, I would move approval.
Second.
And then welcome any.
Would you like to step up and introduce yourself?
It's nice to meet all of you.
Thank you for coming.
I don't know what, I've done a variety of things in my life, yes. I've not done much with the aging, but certainly had personal family experience with that. So I had a good tour of Brookside yesterday, and it's quite the facility. Should be very proud of it. Comparing it to other facilities I've been in. So, if you have any questions, I was a clerk for 46 years in Wheatland. So that entails a variety of jobs. Everything but cemetery digging and dog catching. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Yes, Supervisor Nowrocki.
First of all, thank you for your 46 years of service.
Well, thank you.
I'd just like to make a comment. As chairman of the Board of Trustees, I'm so excited about her coming on as a trustee. She's coming to board with a bundle of experience, and I think she's going to be a heck of a nice asset for the commission. So I hope you support her.
Thank you.
Again, Sheila, thank you for your 46 years of service. I just wanted to ask you, why are you interested in being a trustee? What sparked you to want to serve on the Board of Trustees?
Well, I do live out in the west end of the county, which is part of Kenosha County, even though the east end. So I think it's, if I was asked to be on it, and I think it's important people serve if they think they can add to the situation. And I do represent the West End, so.
Well, I represent the West End as well, so I appreciate you bringing your perspective to the Brookside Board of Trustees.
Thank you.
Any other supervisors? Seeing none, we have a motion by Supervisor Pearson, second by Supervisor Getz. Is there any further discussion? All right, all in favor of the appointment, youth and governance?
Aye.
And the rest of the committee?
Aye. Aye.
I will make sure you sign this, I will pass this around. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
All right, number six, a resolution requesting the purchase of one Pendar X10 spectrometer and two TruNarc analyzers with opioid settlement funds for use by the Kenosha County Sheriff's Department.
Chairman, I would move approval.
Second.
All right, you got a motion by Supervisor Pearson, second by Supervisor Stocker. I will you could just give us a brief overview of the resolution before we move on to discussion.
Absolutely, and I have Kenosha Sheriff's Department representation too. We have been listening to the sheriff talk about exposure that our employees have had of fentanyl, that Narcan has had to been used on our Sheriff's Department staff. So certainly when Sheriff Cerner brought this recommendation to the opioid settlement panel to be able to have a purchase of 2 True Narc and
one Pendar.
That one Pendar and 2 True Narc. The 2 True Narc will be used in the field so deputies can identify the substances that they're handling to protect themselves. And the Pendar will be used in the detention center for jailers to use.
One of the 2 Narcs will be at the will be in the jail, and the other one will be on the road for the deputies to use. So the one in the jail is due to all everything coming in. One of the exposures we did have was with an officer that was booking the subject, you know, some white powder fell out of a pocket, and lo and behold, it was fentanyl. So now there is a heightened sense of any time they in the jail, somebody, you know, they, when somebody comes in, we empty all their pockets, they empty their socks, all that stuff. So anytime there's something white falling out of something, now there's that, you know, the alert goes up, and with these units, they can test it immediately. Is this, what is this? Is it fentanyl? Is it something they need to be concerned about? Or is it simply just, you know, something else? So that's why specifically the sheriff wanted one for the jail. Through the exposure where we did have a CO that was exposed, you know, Narcan was used, he was transported to the hospital. So that is the reason, one of the reasons this came forward. And the other reason is for the deputies on the road, the same kind of situation. So they can know immediately what they're dealing with.
I will say, before we get into discussion real quick, I will say I actually Googled the names because I've never heard of these things before and watched a couple of the videos this afternoon actually. I was very surprised at how specific they can get. They did some video demonstrations and they look like pretty complicated pieces of equipment that can get a lot. Question I had is how does this translate as far as the Sheriff's Department using it as I guess when it comes to evidence or what is it? Does it? I guess my question is: does it hold up in court? Is it like a standard? Is it that type of a thing? Or
yeah. So I'm Joe Zarletti. I'm the sergeant in charge of the drug unit for Kenosha County. The both units are still a field presumptive test.
Okay.
So what that means is at court, they're going to ultimately want to test it regardless. These are units that are tried and true. They've been used by the DEA. FBI has a few of them. The Pendar one would be utilized by my unit specifically because I have a detective who is not only a narcotics investigator but also a bomb technician, and the Pendar has the capabilities of detecting explosive material. So it would still be, like I said, a field presumptive test, still subject to whatever testing that the district attorney's office wants us to do after the fact, but it would eliminate the need for, I guess, it would really come down to reducing the risk of exposure by allowing us to know exactly what we're dealing with in a more controlled environment in a safer manner.
So this is similar to, like, I believe you guys presented, maybe not the Sheriff's Department, with the fentanyl test strips that we had presented to the committee where you actually had to take a sample and dip it.
So
this can do it from a distance with a handheld.
Correct. Yeah, the current technology we have, you do have to take a sample, which kind of ups the exposure. With these other pieces of equipment, you can, Pendar specifically, you can kind of point a laser at it and it'll tell you what it is.
Excellent. Pretty amazing. Any further discussion from the committee on these two items? Awesome. We had a motion and a second. Is there any? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The rest of the committee?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next up, we move on to the presentation, DCFS on interventions to improve school behavior and attendance. This was at the request of Supervisor Gearston, so I appreciate you guys coming out today to make this presentation.
Yeah, happy to do so. Thank you very much, Chairman Scott. So I'm Ron Rogers. I'm the Director of the Division of Children and Family Services, and this is Donna Rhodes, our Gang Intervention Supervisor, so one of our social work supervisors. Just so I'm clear, how much time do we have? When do you need to, when do you want to wrap up?
I would say 20 minutes, 25 minutes max, but definitely
we'll try
some,
to wrap up close to 6.
Leave some time for questions.
Okay, we can do that. So what we organized for you today is sort of a high-level overview. We intervene with kids voluntarily and also through court orders. So we have programs that improve kids' behavior in school and attendance that are under our umbrella of the Prevention Services Network. We will also touch briefly on a program we've had a long-standing partnership with KUSD at Hillcrest School. We'll share information on that. And then we'll share you some just real brief overview of goals that we've achieved with these programs. And so the first question I'm just going to put out there is, why do we do this? Why do we work with kids before they get in trouble? Well, because we want to intervene in youth's lives before they get in trouble. A strong correlation is if you're a kid who gets in trouble in school and miss school a lot and get into a lot of problems in school, you're on your way to becoming delinquent. And that's people have known that for years. So I'm going to turn this over to Donna, and she'll start with our first programs.
So, excuse me, in Kenosha, we are very, very fortunate to have the Prevention Services Network. There are many, many communities that they started intervention, but Kenosha has been proactive enough that we have our Prevention Services Network, and many of our truancy programs are housed in the PSN. So we have school liaison programs. There are liaisons placed at the high school, middle school, and elementary level. The high schools, they are at Bradford, Reuther, ITA, and Shrimper. The middle school liaisons are at Washington, Lincoln, and Bullen Middle School. And they provide similar services to address youth who have been deemed to be habitually truant. And those services can include groups, referrals for psychiatric and psychiatric care, working cooperative with the family to remove barriers. A lot of times we would think it's something big like a drug and alcohol problem. Sometimes it's just simple that there's not enough structure in the home, or the mom doesn't have proper child care or proper transportation. So the programs work to try to assess what these barriers are and then remove those barriers. Sometimes it's a fractured relationship with the schools. We want to get in there and find out why is the relationship with the school fractured. So the program will help rebuild that connection between the school, the youth, and the family. So the middle school and the high school liaisons have very similar activities and interventions. And then we have our elementary school liaison. They work with all KUSD elementary schools. They're just one worker that's spread among all the schools. And they work with anybody elementary school level and provide the same interventions except for one major difference. It is not an elementary school child is not responsible for being truant. That is a parenting issue. That kid is not going to wake up at 5 years old and say, no, I'm not going to school today. So it's usually a structural issue, a parenting issue. So a requirement of elementary school liaison work is that the parents must complete a parenting class. Now that can be through any of our community partners, or it can be a one-on-one class in the home. And we do that just so we can try to strengthen that home for not only that child, but any kids coming up behind them. So we don't have to have these legacy families with kids coming through, again, truant and truant over and over again. One of the most exciting programs we just started, just this year in 2024, we got an innovation grant from the state of Wisconsin to start a countywide truancy reduction program. And what that program does, it fills the gaps left by the liaison programs. So the liaison programs are only in the schools I mentioned, except for all the elementary schools. So we have all the other schools, plus we have the West Sunday High schools that had no intervention. So we wrote a grant for the countywide truancy reduction program to capture all of those kids that are not in the school with a school liaison. So that program just started January 1st. It's fully staffed at this point, and I'm so happy to announce it has 20 referrals right now, 11 of them being from our county schools west of the I. And that's a population that has just been ignored, and we need to address that population too.
So just to clarify, every program that Donna spoke about, we get word of these, how are the youth identified? The schools identify the youth, or if the family is working with in our Prevention Services Network for voluntary supports and school attendance, school behavior is an issue, they can make a referral into these programs too. And then with the middle and high school programs, Occasionally, a county worker will refer into them when they have a county court-ordered child on their caseload that's struggling with school. But again, the idea is, again, we want to intervene before they need to go to court for a truancy petition. That's the main thought here.
Yeah, and that's the goal, particularly for the countywide truancy reduction program, because that program is for youth age 10 and up to avoid being referred to juvenile court. So these other programs could be prevention, but they're also intervention. The countywide truancy reduction program is strictly prevention. Then we also, we have a collaboration with KUSD in two programs housed at Hillcrest School. It's the Bridges program that primarily works with youth that have been expelled or on an abeyance from KUSD. And then there's the Time program that works with youth who have special education needs who, because of behavior and often mental health, cannot make it in their regular high school. So that program, those programs provide very similar service, very similar interventions, just trying to build relationships with the youth and family and get them connected and to get to the point where they value education, value their own education.
And I think the one thing you can think about is it's a collaboration and partnership. So every program we've talked about, the private agency that staffs the program is community impact programs. These last two, Hillcrest, Bridges, and Time. So KUSD is supplying the building, the teachers, the principal for Hillcrest School. Think of it as it's two halves to Hillcrest School. And then kids are getting referred there either with they've been expelled from their home school, or they're on the cut, they keep getting in trouble. And, or some are delinquent youth that have really struggled in school, and we ask that they go there, court-ordered kids. And so this program, three workers in the Bridges side, three workers on the Time side, they conduct groups, they do things to try to teach these kids pro-social skills, how to handle frustration, how to relearn, how to immerse themselves in education and be successful again. And just as in the other programs, they will do, you know, they'll do whatever they need to get these kids back in school. So if the kid doesn't show up to school one day, they're calling home, they're driving out there, they're getting that kid back to school. And then they do groups and homework help. And they also try to engage kids in after school activities. I don't mean traditional sports, but something that will pique their interest so the kids can get excited about school again. And I think what sometimes we forget, especially if you've gone on to school, if you've gone to college or anything, is, you know, a lot of people in like government work they have pretty good feelings about school. These are kids that often feel horrible about school. For whatever reason, they're on a downward trajectory. So the idea is not to catch them doing something wrong, but reach out to them and find what motivates them to get them back in the groove of going to school again. And Hillcrest has been a very positive development. It's been involved for, John, I'm looking at you, like 30 years, I think?
I think I've been here that long.
No.
When I started in 1989, that program was already in place. So both that and then Bridges shortly thereafter.
Yep.
And a few years ago, we were able to get BFI, Brighter Futures Initiative funding, for $250,000 to offset the funds that's going into that program. And then so we got 400 one year. The next year we applied for 400. They were only given one grant. So we were 1 point off from the 400, but they liked our proposal so much that they gave us $250.
Yeah.
And one of the things that put us over the edge is we have mental health treatment right inside of Hillcrest School. There's a therapist right there in the building that kids can see on a regular scheduled basis, or if they're in school dysregulated, having problems, then they can just see them on an emergency basis.
Yeah. So I know the question came up from Supervisor Gertson, are these programs effective? So let's look at that. So what we measure overarching goals for these programs. We measure anywhere from between 8 to 10 goals. This is a high-level overview. What I did is we pulled together how did we do in the last 5 years, so 2019, 20, 21, 22, 23. And the goals I picked for the high school are just some broad overview goals. So if you go from the top to bottom,
Our youth enrolled in the program at least one quarter will maintain zero out-of-school suspensions or reduce the number of out-of-school suspensions from program start to closure. We set our goal at 80%. We want 80% of our kids to achieve that goal. 90% achieve that over a five-year period. The next one, youth will that successfully complete the program will not be referred to juvenile intake within 6 months of case closure. That means they're not coming in because of they're delinquent or they're truant. That's juvenile intake is where you cases get referred when kids are getting in trouble with the court. We set our goal at 80%, we hit 94%. Youth enrolled in the program at least one quarter will increase the number of classes attended from program start to closure. We set that at 80%. We achieved 78% over a five-year period, so just under our goal. Youth enrolled in the program at least one quarter will improve their GPA. This is actually two goals in one, or be on target to obtain requirements by case closure. Some of our kids are in special ed programming that they don't really get measured by a GPA anymore. So the idea is, are they on track? Are they on track to be successful? We set that at 80%. We achieved 86% over 5 years. And then a last one, parent with youth enrolled at least one quarter will participate in at least two educational activities regarding their child per quarter. So we set that a little lower at 75%. Actually, we achieved that at just almost 90%. So why do we put a goal like that in here? Because the key to any sustaining any change with kids going to school is family involvement. You have to get the parents to get more involved in the school programming. And often, kids that are struggling in school, often one or both of their parents also had history of not doing well in school. And so they don't necessarily value education as much, or they're used to getting these negative phone calls from the school. So we want to bridge that gap and get parents understanding how important education is and get them involved in some activities so we break down those barriers. If I look at the middle school liaison program, it's similar. These are the same goals. So I'll just go through them very quickly, stay on your clock. So youth enrolled in the program at least one quarter, zero out of school suspensions or reduced. We achieved that at 86%. Completing the program will not be referred to juvenile court intake within 6 months. We achieved that at 92%. Youth enrolled in the program at least one quarter will increase the number of classes attended from program start to closure. We achieved that at 79%. Youth enrolled in the program at least one quarter will improve their GPA or be on target. We achieved that at 85%. And then the parents, again, we achieved that goal of participation at 90%. And then if you look at the elementary school program, I'm going to highlight just a couple of ones that are different. We're catching kids really young. So we want to know if they're not identified as habitually truant and they're in the program at least 30 days, they're going to increase the number of days they've attended. We achieve that 100% over a five-year period. That's really actually remarkable to be up over 5 years. But looking at one of the last goal on that group, parents will complete a parenting curriculum while in the program. And that's getting to what Donna shared, is that program, when people agree to be in that program, we're offering them just a generalized parenting curriculum for elementary kids. And what I mean by that is, how do you structure your home? How do you organize your day? What do kids need? Some of our parents are really a little lost on even basic, understanding of, you got a second grader. They need to go to bed a lot earlier than you're putting them to bed. That's why you're having trouble getting them out the door to school. They can't stay up until 10 o'clock at night and watch TV with you. They need to go to bed a lot earlier. Some of those basic things that we all maybe grew up with that some people have forgotten. So we do a parenting curriculum with that group to help reinforce that. And I'll let Donna talk about the program goals for Bridges and...
I can just see you guys have tons of questions, so we're going to wrap up quickly so we can get you out of here. So for the Bridges program, we're not going to go over everyone, but there's a couple that stand out. These are pretty high-risk kids, and they are currently expelled, usually for drugs in school or bomb threat or something like that. But in this program, 92% were able to stay are delinquency-free while involved in the program, thanks to the supports offered at the program. But then also, we set the goal of 75% will improve their attendance, and we met that at 86%.
Right.
For the TIME program, the TIME program has the toughest kids in KUSD. These are the kids who have significant mental health problems, significant behavioral issues. A lot of them are already delinquent. So even looking at that number, we set the goal at 80% for no new delinquencies. Fell a little short at 73%, but that's still a remarkable number to met. We kept a lot of kids out of the youth justice system. And again, 89% of those kids increased their attendance while in the TIME program. So what exactly is truancy? The bar is very low, actually. It is being unexcused for all or part of 5 days in a semester, which means if you're late to a class every day for a week, you're habitually truant. Now, those are not the kids we deal with. We deal with the kids who have much, much more needs. So 10% of the kids in the state of Wisconsin actually meet the definition of habitual truancy. So how does the case come in? If a school makes a referral for a truant kid, that case, we try to start it at JCI informally, so they can get what's called a deferred prosecution agreement, some conditions they have to meet. As long as they meet those conditions, it's never a referral to juvenile court. When those kids are not successful, then they are referred to court and for formal DCFS supervision. So for 2022, of the cases that were referred through JCI were successfully diverted, which means those kids improved their attendance and their case was closed. The other 46% were referred onto DCFS for formal supervision. And of those kids, along with the other kids we have, 88% of those kids, once they complete supervision, improve their attendance so much they are not re-referred back to court or JCI for habitual truancy. So the efforts in the programs really work.
So we have time for a few questions if you have any.
Supervisor Gerson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we talked a lot about truancy through different avenues, and I, from having worked here, I was aware that we did a lot of work with truancy. But from a budget standpoint, and you can follow up later on this if you want to, how many FTEs and how much money do we spend on these programs?
Sure.
I'm not just looking at levy, but if you want to follow up later. But
yeah.
So, and while you're looking at that, I just want to say this is really, really important.
Yeah.
This may be one of the most important things the county does, is taking care of our kids this way.
Yeah,
so keep fighting this, and I know you're coming to us and letting us know what can we do to make sure we're helping with this. But I was just, this is a big deal. We put a lot of effort into this.
Yeah.
So
I won't give you all the numbers right now. We have, so those liaison programs, high school, middle school, those are 7 FTEs plus a supervisor, plus the elementary, so that's 8. And now the
9
with the countywide truancy reduction, so 9. And now, and then in Hillcrest, there's a total of 7. And then we have our county staff. When these, we have 8 social workers that once a case becomes, so that unit works with delinquent youth and truant youth. And about a third of the cases up there are truancy, roughly. And there's 8 county staff that share that work.
So one more question, the Village of Summers is in the Unified School District. How are there things, do we work together well? Are there things we can do to improve that? Not the municipality, it's just that my district, we're not west of the county, we're in the Unified School District.
If they do not have a school liaison, they can refer to the countywide truancy reduction program and get intervention for their kids.
Yeah. So the middle and high school programs, KUSD actually contributes funding for both of those programs. We also blend in 2 different grant dollars into that, and I can get you that breakdown.
their AODA grants because of the age group of kids. So we incorporate some educational keeping kids away from drugs and alcohol. The countywide truancy reduction program, as Donna said, that's fully funded by a grant this year, a $100,000 grant, and then we can reapply next year for 75. And then the Hillcrest programming, we have what we call Brighter Futures Initiative funding in it. So we support our contribution with, we call BFI money. It's $195,000 this calendar year.
What's the source of that?
I should yield it.
Okay. Super
Supervisor,
just to follow up, what's the source of the BFI money? Is that state or federal?
That's all state. Everything, the AODA money is state, and so is the BFI money. And the countywide truancy is state money as well.
Of course.
So I have a few questions, but at the state level, we just wrapped up the Speaker's Task Force on Truancy, which I served on, and we proposed four bills to the legislature that are sort of a beginning point where, you know, we need to take a deeper dive on this, and we really appreciate all the work that you guys do here locally with boots on the ground. I actually had a bill to address the definition of truancy, because we learned on the task force that every single school district out of 421 school districts can define habitual truancy differently. And many people don't understand the difference between habitual truancy, chronic absenteeism, excused, unexcused, what allowances are made for children who have mental health issues or you know, special needs or health issues. I would love to hear if you have any recommendations, because if you have five tardies in a semester, you're habitually truant. The bill sort of made it, you had to miss a third or more of a day. We're getting there in the right, and that was a recommendation from KUSC. They said, you know, we would love to be able to narrow down that group of students, because we're getting too many who aren't really habitually truant with this definition. Would you agree with that?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many are really habitually truant, where it's more problematic, more chronic?
The ones we touch, they are the deep end. They are the kids that have not gone to school for weeks and weeks at a time.
Right.
Yeah.
And how many, for many reasons, would you estimate, say, in KUSD on average?
I don't have a good answer. We could talk with our partner in this work is Juvenile Court Intake Services, Mary Beyer, and all those referrals. So she has a good sense, because when the referrals are sent to court, they read all of those. And so she has a good sense of which ones are really excessively missing and which ones are lighter.
So I will follow up with you on your recommendation about how to, we would like to have a consistent statewide definition of habitual truancy so that we can more accurately identify really truly at-risk students versus those who are just late once in a while. Also, I was wondering, you said on all these measurements there was, you know, certainly success when you got parents involved.
Yes.
What are you doing to get them to participate?
Really reaching
besides
out
they,
to them.
Because they could get a citation, or they already have. But
no, it's these liaisons, the workers at Hillcrest, they're calling them. They're talking to them like a parent who cares about their kids, and they're trying to, you know, the parents we work with tend to have a knee-jerk reaction that if the school calls, they think it's something horrible, and they've gotten horrible calls for a long time. So they just start to build a relationship and start to focus on what their son or daughter is doing well, and then and how the parents are an important part of that success going forward. So it's not a simple one in the door and you do that, it's over time. But then they do it. They do it, they get the parents.
It's also assessing and removing barriers. We have so many barriers. There's a 2 mile distance. You live within 2 miles out of school, you cannot get a bus. So if you have a five-year-old and then a three-year-old and a two-year-old at home, you have to walk the five-year-old 1.9 miles on a really cold day. Guess what? That kid's not going to school.
Right.
And so often that is the source of little truant cases we get, is because mom or dad can't get that,
particularly in elementary.
Right. In elementary particularly, yes.
And the last question I had was, you talked about the liaisons. What are their qualifications? What is their background? Are they social work?
Yeah, they generally are people we're requiring college degrees in social work or human service fields.
All bachelor's degrees.
All bachelor's degrees, 4-year degree, sociology, psychology, social work. There's other categories, but those are the main ones. And this is often more of an entry-level job. I won't deny that. It really is. It's how people who want to help kids and families, and they get started. Mm-hmm. And they get excited about the work. And they do it well for a while, a few years, and then they hopefully move on up.
I started as a liaison at Rupa.
Fantastic. So you know all the ins and outs. I think that was it for me. Thank you for your
time.
Yeah, I get the back end of this. My brother-in-law is the truancy officer at Tremper High School. So he's the one going to court. He's the one doing all the stuff when they get in deep doo-doo. So I can really appreciate all the work you guys are putting in. Because if you're not doing preventative stuff and getting them early and working behind the scenes, then it gets to him. And I hear him bitching about it all the time. So, I mean, their kids just, you know, and then he talks to the parent, and the parent has no clue and what's going on in life. And, you know, it's just really it's a sad state of affairs. So it's encouraging to me to hear the work that you guys do. And I think it's just vital.
The earlier we can intervene, the better.
Right.
Our outcomes with little kids are so great. Yeah. But sometimes we don't get them till they're in high school. Yeah. And then we look back at the history, and they've been truant for years, and they fell through the cracks. Yeah. So when we can get them young, we can make a difference.
Yeah. The referral of a 17-year-old for truancy, that we're not, I won't pretend we're successful with that, because we, you know, we often are not, right? They're just older.
Right.
That's sort of
with 2 credits, yeah. Or a half credit.
Yeah. So.
And they've already built up, they've already, through habit, brought themselves to that point.
Yes, exactly.
They don't become 17 and decide, I don't want to go to school.
No.
So this has been going on all along, and a lot of it is the parents, and a lot of it is,
correct.
You know, earlier intervention and stuff like that. So, I mean, like I said, I was very happy to hear what you guys do behind the scenes, because it is really, I actually do agree with Supervisor Gerson on this. It is very important. With our youth and how they're handled in these situations. So, thank you very much.
Any other questions? Get ready to
go. Do you know the graduation rate for your students? I know it's not part of this program, but
we have not measured that. I don't have that tracked. We measure, we have other goals we do measure, like whether they are referred in for trouble like a year later for some of the programs. And we know we have kids graduating from Hillcrest, which is a great improvement, but that's one we have not tracked.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want to go to a uplifting event, go to a Hillcrest graduation.
I have been there.
Isn't it wonderful?
I have a good friend who teaches there.
Oh,
and
great.
I've actually spoke to students on government there as well.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right. I requested the report, so thank you so much for bringing it. This is very good.
Thank good.
You. Any other count? Youth and governance?
Yeah, I'm a senior in high school over at Indian Trail, and I know a lot of students that have been slipping, like just throughout high school, throughout middle school. So I appreciate the work you do. I know it means a lot to students, even as they progress throughout their high school careers. And I know students that have been really truant, especially as an effect of the COVID-19 pandemic, and have really gotten back into school after that.
Yeah.
So. As a student who sees the direct impact of your work, I appreciate it.
Thank you. We're going to try to get to this without
saying
COVID.
that was going to be my question. I will entertain. Is there a motion? Oh, any other? Thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
You.
My
You're
comments.
Welcome.
I really liked seeing. I really liked how you guys laid out the report with the goals and
this
was very, very helpful. Help visualize it. So,
good.
With that, is there any other businesses authorized by law? Seeing none, is there motion to
adjourn?
Motion by Supervisor Stocker, second by Supervisor Gearston. All in favor?
Aye.
We've got another meeting.
See you guys upstairs.
I've got two more meetings.
Thank you.